I'm Matt, and this is Ghostthropology. This podcast is an exploration of ghostly folklore and its relationship to the cultures that produce it. I don't know where or when you are listening to this, but I hope that it's dark outside, as that is the best time for ghost stories. Episode 73, Shadow People. Strange entities wander our world. When you see one in the dark, you may, at first, think that it's just a normal person. But if you look closer, you'll see that they are blacker than the darkness in which they lurk, that they lack any identifiable facial features, except, occasionally, glowing red eyes, and that they seem to appear and disappear without any explanation. These are the shadow people. These creatures seem to favor our domestic spaces. People typically encounter them when at home, whether it's waking up to see a shadowy figure standing over you, seeing it looking in your windows, or observing it in a doorway or down the hall from you. Home is where the horror happens. The most common place within the home where people report seeing shadow people is in their bedrooms, either as they are falling asleep or when they first wake up. However, these entities can also be seen in any number of places and when the witness is wide awake. If you go looking for reports of shadow people, you will find that they can occur anywhere. And while they usually occur in the dark, there are even rare occasions where they are seen in broad daylight. Those who see shadow people usually report feeling frightened or feeling a sense of dread. But shadow people rarely seem to interact with people, physically or in any other way. Instead, they stand silently, as if watching. There are, however, occasions when people report being touched by a shadow person, grabbed, hit, or even lifted. Those who wake up to find a shadow person standing over them often, but not always, report that they are unable to move, as if paralyzed with fear. While they may favor our homes, they are not limited to them. Reports of shadow people are common in most places with a reputation of being haunted. They are often reported by ghost hunters and paranormal investigators working in all manner of haunted places, including both inside and outdoors. There also seem to be many different types of shadow people. The most common is simply a dark humanoid figure, sometimes a bit misshapen, typically too tall or too thin, but more or less human-looking, except for the black color and the lack of observable features. One of the most discussed and most feared is called the Hat Man, which is a shadow person who appears to be wearing a hat and has glowing eyes, which are usually, but not always, red in color. People who encounter the Hat Man report feeling a sense of menace, as if he is enjoying their fear. Many shadow people move normally, except for the part where they appear out of nowhere and vanish into nothing, while others seem to be moving too fast or in a jerky fashion, as if they are on film that is being run through a projector incorrectly. Possibly one of the creepiest of all shadow people goes by a variety of names, but is often referred to as the crawler. This is, like all of the others, a humanoid shadowy figure, but it moves on all fours, often crab walking, but sometimes face down. The crawler is known to scuttle at high speed along the ground, but has also been observed climbing walls and crawling along ceilings, sometimes clinging to a ceiling and looking down on anybody unfortunate enough to be in the area. While most shadow people seem to be calm observers, crawlers appear to be aggressive, and it has been reported that they sometimes chase people. So, what are the shadow people? Some people claim that they are ghosts, while others say that they are demons. Indeed, at least one source I found specifically states that they are demons associated with trauma, especially childhood trauma, or drug abuse. However, far more common explanations for the shadow people verge into the realms typically reserved for science fiction. For instance, one of the most common explanations is that they are extra-dimensional beings living alongside us humans, but only observable when conditions are right or when they choose to be seen. Others would hold that they are extraterrestrial, either aliens with shadowy appearances or else aliens in disguise or attempting to cloak themselves. Other theories state that the shadow people are simply people, but that time has slipped and we are observing them in the here and now when they are in fact in the past or the future, and they may be as surprised to see us as we are to see them. Many shadow people theorists hold that there are many explanations, as, after all, there are many types of shadow people. And shadow people, though usually frightening, are not always so. There are reports of shadow people who are helpful or simply neutral. But most carry an air of menace, even if they are doing nothing. We may not know what they are or what they want, but we know that they are here and that they could appear anywhere. Try not to think about it as you drift off to sleep tonight. Commentary. I've been looking forward to doing this episode for quite a while. Shadow people stories are among my favorite type of ghost stories. Doing primary source research on shadow people is in some ways quite easy and in others quite difficult, as most of the stories about shadow people have always come from online forums. Simply going to one's favorite paranormal site is likely to get you a lot of original tales. And I have linked to Shadow People archives in the show notes. In addition, several books by self-styled paranormal investigators cover this subject, and one that I found and used for this show did an excellent job of summing up much of the online discussion. Shadow people are wonderfully creepy and can really get under your skin. I do not fault anyone for getting into these stories and for spending time pondering them, as I do it myself. I feel the need to say that, as what I'm about to say may be taken as me bashing these stories and those fascinated with them. And so I want to make it clear that this is not my intention. I am not mocking those of you who love the Shadow People stories. I am one of you. Shadow people are one of the phenomena that inspire a lot of speculation regarding their nature and goals. But to seriously ponder this, as many people do, one must first conclude that they are a real phenomena and not the result of difficulties with or quirks of human perception. And this is a bit of a problem, as there is such a wide range of well-known mundane things that can cause people to see them that shadow people, from an ontological standpoint, become really uninteresting. There are likely some shadow people encounters that cannot be explained by knowing how human perception works. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they are supernatural, just that the explanation lies somewhere other than an understanding of perception. After 20 years of encountering and thinking about shadow person stories, I'm inclined to agree with Brian Dunning of the Skeptoid podcast when he explains that there probably isn't any single mundane explanation for shadow people, but rather a range of explanations that apply to different sightings and encounters. For example, at any given moment, you are not looking at everything that you seem to see. Rather, your eyes are scanning and your brain is assembling an image. When there isn't complete visual information available, your brain will insert what appears to be likely items based on your experiences into your visual field until it can get better information to work with. For a personal example, and I will be using a lot of personal examples in this episode, Some years back, my wife and I watched a television show called Better Off Ted. During that period, I was in line at the post office when I could have sworn that one of the actresses from that show, in full costume for the character she played, walked in. I stood stunned for a moment and then turned to look closer and saw that the woman looked nothing like the actress in question, but that her hair color, skin tone, and the color of her clothes were roughly correct for the character. And since she had walked by quickly, my brain didn't have time to register what she looked like quite right, so it filled in details with a close enough match from my recent television viewing. This sort of thing happens all the time, and if you stop to think about it, you will likely think of experiences where you thought you saw one thing, only for it to turn out to be something different. It's just the way that human vision works. So if you don't get a good look at something dark in your field of vision, or if there is something else in your field of vision that is interfering, as is common when you are viewing something through a screen or a dirty window or the like, your brain may fill in details to turn that object into a shadow form of a person. And just as I saw an actress from a TV show I was watching in full costume at the post office, if you are routinely consuming media about shadow people or even spending a lot of time thinking about shadow people, then that becomes a larger part of the visual vocabulary that your brain can draw upon. You may be more likely to see shadow people if you spend a lot of time thinking about, reading about, or watching media about shadow people, because it is something that your brain is more likely to use to fill in space. Another thing that impacts our ability to see what is around us is the light level. While there are stories of shadow people being seen in daylight, they are more often spotted in the dark. The fact is, our eyes do not function as well in low light, and we are likely to need to fill in more voids. Given that we are already seeing things in the dark, adding more shadows is an easy thing for our brains to do. Beyond that, if we are in a heightened emotional state, or we are fatigued, or on certain medications or drugs, or dealing with a range of mental health issues from schizophrenia to bipolar disorder, we are more likely to hallucinate shadowy figures in the dark. On top of all of that, if we see a normal person dressed in dark clothing in low light conditions, we may very well mistake them for a walking shadow, an experience that I have had myself. To illustrate the ways that we can perceive things in the dark or while fatigued, I'm going to give another personal example. Around 15 years ago, I was working on a project that was a 5-hour drive from my home. I would drive out on a Sunday, spend 2 weeks working 80 hours each week, most of it involving physical labor in a hot San Joaquin Valley summer, and then drive home on a Friday night. I would have one day off every 2 weeks. I was exhausted, and the drive home was usually pretty rough. One night, I was driving near Salinas, and I saw something moving outside of my car, a big black animal of some sort. Not just big, huge. But when I turned to look, and even when I stopped my car to look, it was gone. But when I would start driving again, there it was, galloping in the fields to my left, keeping pace with my car, some dark, shadowy beast. I was genuinely scared, but I was also curious. What was this thing? Being young and stupid at the time, my curiosity outweighed my fear. After I stopped a couple of times to look at the scene from a stationary position, I realized what was happening. There was a tree row to my left. It ran along the highway for several miles, and the galloping motion I was seeing was actually the dark night sky seen through the trees, with the lights from my car and other cars reflecting off of the branches. Once I realized this, it was easy to track the trees as I drove, and I stopped seeing the huge beast. My shadow beast was an optical illusion, but I only know that because I had the opportunity to stop and figure it out. Often, when people have these experiences, they either do not have the necessary control over the situation to stop and look around, or they are smarter than I was back then and they decide that they are getting out of the place with a perceived danger. The end result is that they never figure out what it is that they saw. Because shadow people are so often seen when one is in bed, one of the most common explanations given is sleep paralysis. which is where a person begins to wake up at a time when they do not have full muscle control. This lack of muscle control, known as atonia, is actually a feature of our bodies. It is to prevent a person from injuring themselves or others during REM sleep when they experience vivid dreams. Typically, when you wake, you are no longer in an atonic state and you have control over your muscles. But when someone experiences sleep paralysis, they have atonia, and the brain is both partially in a state of consciousness and also partially experiencing REM sleep. When this happens, a person will often experience hallucinations, but be unable to respond to them. These hallucinations are not always shadowy figures. They can, in fact, be shaped by one's culture and experiences and can be a number of different things. But shadowy figures are common. I could not find a reason why they are common, but if I had to hazard a guess, I'd say it's likely because, as I will get into in a moment, shadowy figures are a simple hallucination for your brain to create. Hypnagogic hallucinations are also a common experience. These are hallucinations that most people will, at some point in their life, experience while falling asleep. And the point when one is falling asleep is also a common time for people to report encounters with shadow people. You can also experience hallucinations on first waking up, called hypnopompia. And these, again, are very common. In his Skeptoid episode on shadow people, Brian Dunning describes a childhood hypnopompic episode in which he awoke to see Muppets performing in the tree outside his bedroom window. It wasn't sleep paralysis, but it was this known phenomenon. I myself had an experience as a teenager in which I awoke early one morning and was aware both of being in my bedroom and of being a soldier in a trench during World War I. Not too surprising in hindsight, as I had watched a show on World War I trench warfare the night before. These experiences are vivid and can have a heavy emotional impact on you. I felt upset and rather disturbed the entire day after my experience, but they are nonetheless not paranormal. Another explanation for some shadow people encounters is optical illusions. Back in episode 16, I discuss a bit of California folklore regarding the Dark Watchers, black cloaked figures that stand and watch in the coastal Santa Lucia Mountains. Unsurprisingly, these entities are often grouped in with shadow people. However, there is some reason to believe that the sightings of the Dark Watchers are due to an optical illusion called a Brocken specter, where the shadow of an object, often a tree, against fog looks like a black humanoid figure. And if there is one optical illusion that can create a shadow person-like image, it stands to reason that there are others. Finally, while there are certainly stories of people seeing these shadows clearly, many people who report encounters with shadow people report seeing them out of the corner of their eye and not head-on. Several sources I read claim that this is proof of the reality of shadow people because, according to these sources, we see more accurately or clearly in our peripheral vision than when looking at something straight on, which is just a weird load of nonsense. Peripheral vision exists to sense motion, not detail. It's a heads up to let us know if we should turn to look, and any movement can set off our peripheral vision. So yeah, it would actually be a bit odd if you did not sometimes see shadowy forms in your peripheral vision, even without an assumption that shadow people are a real thing that exists. One of the sources that I used for this episode, A Walk in the Shadows by Mike Ricksecker, is a fun and recommended read for the stories of shadow person encounters that it contains, but I would not recommend it as a source for grounded information on shadow people. Ricksecker dedicates a few chapters to dismissing hallucinations and sleep paralysis as an explanation for shadow people, and in doing so, he often contradicts himself and demonstrates a lack of understanding regarding how human vision works and the nature of sleep-adjacent hallucinations. In fact, he seems to not want to understand these things. He states that shadow people are the only things seen during sleep paralysis, not other things that a brain might cook up during dreams. And he specifically cites cars that he has dreamed about. And then in that same chapter describes an episode of sleep paralysis in which he did, in fact, see cars. He states that the fact that so many people encounter shadow people when they are in bed, either falling asleep or waking up, means that it's not sleep paralysis and therefore not a product of the brain. But as described already, sleep paralysis is not the only phenomenon tied to the cycle of sleeping and waking when you might have vivid dreams that intrude into the waking world. We have already discussed clear examples of ways that this can occur while you are in control of your muscles and capable of moving. Mr. Ricksecker also bolsters his position with some rather dubious claims about how hearts interact with human perception from the Heart Math Institute, a rather new agey organization that does not, based on my look over, appear to be a particularly credible source for information on such topics. He also uses some quotes from well-known pseudo-archaeology BS artist Graham Hancock, and also brings in a whole lot of stuff that is very clearly not shadow people as support for his claims about shadow people, which is odd. He also gets into a lot of discussion of parallel dimensions, the nature of time, wormholes, etc., that I will discuss a bit later. Now, my goal is not to pick on Mike Ricksecker, though I'm sure that's what it sounds like I am doing. But this book is very consistent with the discourse that I've seen on the subject of shadow people over the past 20 years. There are those who are ready to dismiss people who have these encounters as kooks and crazies, which is not only unfair, but shows a lack of understanding of how the human brain actually works. Then there are those who are ready to give a pat answer to all cases, dismissing it as sleep paralysis or some similar thing, which does not account for a lot of people's actual experiences, especially those that do not occur around sleep. And then you have folks like Mr. Ricksecker, who will build an edifice of description and explanation, starting with the assumption that shadow people encounters are always paranormal, and who will dismiss more mundane explanations without bothering to actually understand those explanations, all while bringing in even more dubious claims to support their position. In online spaces that cater to paranormal enthusiasts, there is a well-grounded frustration with self-styled skeptics who will dismiss a phenomenon or experience without actually bothering to understand it. These folks are typically derided as debunkers or lazy skeptics, and there is a lot of truth to the accusations of laziness. However, the flip side is that many paranormal believers will accept some rather wild things as true despite a lack of evidence. And while the lazy ones may leave it at that, the more motivated ones will often construct elaborate hypotheses and theoretical constructs based on wild speculation, dubious uses of actual science, and whatever pseudoscientific nonsense they can find that seems to fit. Shadow people stories seem to invite these two extremes, with many people simply dismissing the phenomenon with a pat explanation, despite there actually being many explanations available, and those believers who hold on despite the availability of a number of potential explanations and dismiss everything that does not fit into a paranormal box. There is something to the shadow people phenomenon, and it shouldn't be dismissed with a reference to sleep paralysis. But I have yet to see evidence that these are paranormal rather than the result of known aspects of human perception. And those known aspects of human perception should not be dismissed simply to make paranormal claims. Okay, with that part of the discussion done, I want to talk about shadow people as a cultural phenomenon. Believers in the paranormal will often say that shadow people sightings go back to the earliest points of recorded human history, while the more skeptical will say that shadow people are a cultural phenomenon that began in the late 90s or early 2000s. The interesting thing is that they are both right, kinda. There is a lot of precedent for shadowy, menacing figures in world folklore. This is not surprising for a few reasons. The first is that humans tend to be cautious in the dark, as we are very visual creatures, and when our vision is limited by low light, it calls for more caution. In addition, there are a lot of predators that are nocturnal and see well in the dark, which puts us in danger because we are at our least capable of spotting and avoiding them when in low light. So it's not surprising that we would tend to code things that are sinister or evil as being black or shadowy, It's not universal. There are cultures where black and shadows represent a respite from a hot sun, but it is a common way to symbolically show something as menacing. From an art standpoint, black paints obscure other features pretty effectively, allowing them to be used as a way to illustrate something more mysterious or menacing compared to other colors. Similarly, caves and other enclosed spaces not made for human occupation are dark and appear black to our eyes. For a similar reason, black often represents the unknown as well as the grim. Many cultures have the underworld as a specifically dark place, somewhere where it is hard to see, and this is part of the misery of the dead. So it is not surprising that many, again, not all, but many, cultures portray menacing or evil figures as being black in color. Indeed, even the idea of shadowy ghosts is not new. Elizabeth Jane Puddock, a spiritualist medium of the 19th century who went by the name Madame d'Espérance and was later found to be a fraud, described shadowy ghosts very similar to the 21st century conception of shadow people. And I suspect that she was not the first person to identify such shadowy ghosts. It is worth noting that a common, if now archaic, term for ghost is shade. In addition, there is a long history of discussions of haunted places having strange shadows without a source. Over the years, I've read many accounts of ghostly encounters that involve shadowy figures, but in which the shadows were not said to be anything especially remarkable as compared to the other signs of a haunting. One of the many that sticks in my memory is the Comedy Store in Los Angeles, which has a reputation for being haunted. One episode of the show, Unsolved Mysteries, that aired in 1996, discussed various different hauntings at the building, including a shadowy, menacing form that appeared in the basement. Although this entity clearly conformed to the shadow people archetype, the various paranormal experts on the show, and indeed most of what I read about when I looked up more information on the Comedy Store, did not cite this as being a special type of entity. It was just yet another of many ghostly manifestations that could be experienced in this building. So, at least up through the mid-90s, there didn't seem to be anything particularly special about shadow-like hauntings, though they were definitely reported. They certainly didn't get the level of focus that shadow people would soon begin to receive. So the idea of human-shaped shadows and other shadowy, menacing figures is not a new thing in popular culture. That said, there is a tendency for many current shadow people enthusiasts to want to pull everything together, even if everything doesn't fit. When you begin diving into the modern folklore around shadow people, you will often find lists of shadow person-like figures from ancient cultures, and you should be cautious of these lists. While some of the mythological entities are very similar to what we would now call shadow people, it is common for people to ignore information about these figures inconsistent with the modern idea of shadow people. And I have even seen people falsely claim that mythological or folklore figures that are definitely not shadow-like are shadow-like in order to fit them into the desired mold. But the fact remains that there is a long history of shadow creatures and shadowy ghosts in folklore. So those who believe that shadow people are paranormal are correct on that point, though one could just as easily argue that this is evidence of mundane explanations rather than the supernatural. At the same time, the concept of shadow people as this large world-spanning phenomenon, as opposed to a way that one might describe odd individual instances of lore or even personal experiences, does appear to date to the late 1990s or early 2000s. So while shadowy spirits or creatures have featured in folklore for a very long time, they tended to be culturally specific, generally having only superficial similarities across cultures. And while it has long been common to describe shadowy forms in recounting encounters with the supernatural, this tended to be one of the many different ways that a ghost or other supernatural entity might manifest, along with cold spots, apparitions, making objects move, etc. But in the late 20th and early 21st century, the notion that there was a specific type of entity or phenomenon or more accurately, a subset of entities and phenomena began to take shape. Also, the claims that there are different types of shadow people seems to have begun during this period as well. While reports of shadowy ghosts are an old phenomenon, it appears that discussions in online forums and on Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM in the late 90s began to bring many of these stories together, and the folklore became more formalized around 2001. Heidi Hollis was a guest on Coast to Coast AM several times, and during her appearances on the show, she discussed shadow people as a distinct phenomenon. She even published a book, The Secret War, The Heavens Speak of the Battle, in which she pitched the idea of a secret, apocalyptic, spiritual war between good and evil, with the shadow people being agents of evil. A number of sources cite Hollis's appearances on Coast to Coast AM and the publication of her book as the beginning of shadow people being seen as their own phenomenon, distinct from ghosts. That may be correct, but I believe that I was encountering distinct shadow people sources when I was perusing paranormal websites and forums when I was in my early 20s back in the mid to late 90s. Of course, I may be misremembering. This was almost 3 decades ago, and I did not keep good notes of what I was coming across. But I feel as if shadow people were on my radar around 1998 or 1999 rather than 2001. Indeed, the website, the Shadow Person Archives, indicates that it went online in 1997, though the earliest snapshot I could find on the Internet Archive is from August 3rd, 2003. Though at that point, it did have a bit of content suggesting that it had been around for at least a little while. So perhaps it existed as a more general ghost story prior to that, or for some reason, the Internet Archive's Wayback Machine simply didn't pick up on it earlier. Regardless, by the early 2000s, shadow people were very clearly on the map as distinct entities rather than simply being one possible manifestation of the ghostly presence. Though shadow people are often included amongst more typical ghost stories, a common part of the narrative is that they are not ghosts. Some people claim that they are demons, unsurprisingly, and others claim them to be jinn, demon-adjacent spirits, though not demons, from Arabian folklore. However, these supernatural claims are not dominant. Much more common are the claims that shadow people are from an alternate dimension that exists alongside our own, or that they represent humans or other entities who have slipped through time, or even that they are extraterrestrial entities. The explanations for these various ideas employed a lot of scientific terminology and sciencey-sounding concepts, but all such terminology and concepts are rather divorced from their actual counterparts in science. However, these theories were very much a part of the pop culture of the 90s and early 2000s. This last point is worth considering. When Elizabeth Puttock discussed more or less modern-sounding shadow people in the 19th century, she talked about them using the concepts and vocabulary of the spiritualism that was a common part of the 19th century. But when the notion of shadow people became descendant in the late 90s or early 2000s, these ideas were no longer current. And so the people developing the larger theoretical framework for shadow people used what was available to them, terms that were often more science-sounding than actually scientific. For example, the notion of extra dimensions beyond the three of space and time that we normally contend with emerges from physics and math, where it is a mathematical abstraction that may imply something about our actual universe. Within pop culture, however, this became something very different and inspired the concept of people living in alternate dimensions or alternate timelines alongside our own world and sometimes interacting with ours. The use of the other worlds is now built into most shadow people discourse and bears little resemblance to the scientific idea of additional dimensions. But it is completely consistent with the idea of alternate dimensions used in pop culture products from the late 20th century. For example, this is a key part of the cosmology of Star Trek's Mirror Universe, which was first developed in the 60s but showed up in Star Trek shows in the 90s and beyond as well. Characters pop between the two worlds in various ways and encounter the mirror version of themselves, etc. This is a large part of the premise of the 90s television show Sliders. This concept has been part of speculative fiction for decades, and even the rom-com Sliding Doors utilizes the idea of alternate timelines and the multiverse long before the Marvel Cinematic Universe tapped into the concept. Similarly, the notion of a time slip, where an individual moves into some point in the past or the future, is connected to a small degree on some discussions in physics about the nature of time and the fact that time seems to have odd properties that interact with and even respond to the physical world, such as time slowing or speeding up based on the mass and speed of physical objects. The notion of a time slip has long held a place in paranormal folklore and predates the development of the theory of general relativity, which discusses the odd ways that time interacts with matter. A prominent example of the time slip in paranormal culture is an alleged early 20th century trip through time by two tourists visiting the palace at Versailles. And the notion played a role in the 19th century novels Rip Van Winkle and A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. But it became a much more common part of pop culture in the 90s when it was used as a plot point in two episodes of The X-Files, and of course, aspects of it made its way into various Star Trek series as well. It is also common to hear shadow people discussed as if they might be computer program users looking in on a simulation in which we live. This alleged simulation is often called the Matrix, after the wildly popular late 90s movie of the same name. While variations in the simulation hypothesis of reality have been used in philosophy for centuries, at least since René Descartes, and it has been a topic of conversation, if not much testable scientific notion, among physicists for decades, the version that we see in the shadow people theorizing bears a stronger resemblance to the Matrix than to anything you might see in a classroom. So again, pop culture seems to be informing the discussion. In a similar vein, discussion of wormholes, quantum physics, multiverses, and other science and science fiction concepts often come up in talks surrounding shadow people. However, again, the use of these ideas bears only a superficial resemblance to the actual scientific concepts, but are very close to the pop culture versions that are common in part of our media and late-night dorm room conversations. While working on this script, I took a break and watched a late 90s episode of the cult comedy show Mystery Science Theater 3000, where the cast of the show was pulled through a wormhole as fallout of an ill-advised spacewalk on the part of a gorilla who's also a bumbling scientist. It's Mystery Science Theater, just go with it. While going through the wormhole, the characters experience time slips, alternate universes, and a variety of other things, which it is worth noting, the writers of the show did not make any effort to ensure the scientific validity of. The show's motto is, after all, repeat to yourself it's just a show, I should really just relax. But this goofy, surrealist comedy show ended up using these concepts in precisely the same way that many serious shadow person theorists do. And they did so around the same time that people were beginning to develop the modern notions of what shadow people are. And, well, I just found that striking. While I doubt that many shadow person researchers were taking cues from comedy series about a man and two robots forced to watch bad movies, it does illustrate that there was something in the culture that both the writers of a TV show and the folks developing their ideas of shadow people were drawing from. And I find this use of pop culture versions of various scientific concepts, as well as non-science terms that at least sound science-like, very, very interesting. As noted earlier, the discussion of shadow people by Elizabeth Puddock was couched in terms of spiritualism, a common part of 19th century culture. The cultural significance of spiritualism has faded, but the cultural significance of science fiction, and I do mean science fiction, not science, has risen and infused the way that most of us think about aspects of our daily lives. Whatever the truth of the shadow people are, it makes sense that we would talk about them in terms that our current culture provides. And when you refuse to accept mundane explanations, such as optical illusions, flaws of human perception, hypnopompic and hypnagogic states, and so on, you have to find another explanation. When no better explanation is available, we have an entire vocabulary from science fiction and fantasy that can be applied to make the discussion of shadow people feel like it is more meaningful, as if we aren't just throwing everything at the wall without rhyme or reason. But why create these complex, if implausible, theoretical constructs if shadow people stories can, at least in most cases, be explained by mundane explanations? Well, for some people, it's simply fun to play with creepy ideas. I've done this myself more than a few times. For others, it's tied into part of the appeal of conspiracy theories, the construction of an explanation of the world that allows you to feel like you are special enough to see what is really going on when others don't. For some, it's a rejection of mundanity, a way to enchant their own world, even if in a creepy way. For still others, it may be a way to demonstrate an expertise in something, even if that expertise may be based on shaky grounds, as discussed by anthropologist Michelle Hanks for Paranormal Investigators. For many, the experience of encountering something perceived as frightening may form what folklorist Mark Hufford refers to as a core experience, an experience that seems emotionally to demand something more than what the mundane, but likely accurate explanations have to offer, which can set people looking for bigger explanations, often in the paranormal. There are, in the end, a large number of reasons why people may build and cling to these dubious frameworks, and to dismiss the people who do so as ignorant, stupid, or foolish, as many skeptics do, is not only uncharitable, but is also ignorant in of itself. You don't need to buy into these explanations to see that there is a degree of ingenuity and a lot of creativity that goes into crafting these explanatory constructs. The people who are fascinated by shadow people and who spend time with these explanations, as frustrating as the explanations may be to someone familiar with the reality of the terms and concepts being co-opted, are not stupid people. They are, in fact, often quite clever, and we would do well to keep that in mind. While the terms and concepts employed are typically misused and bear, at best, superficial relationships to the real things, that doesn't change the fact that there is a sense of intelligent play at work in creating these rather questionable explanations. And this may be one of the more important reasons why there is so much focus in paranormal circles on explanations of shadow people. Perhaps it is a form of creative play. Even adults need play, and in a world where we are asked to give up make-believe and focus on what is real, maybe it shouldn't be a surprise that make-believe and creative play gets masked as consideration of something said to be real. I love shadow person stories because they tend to be wonderfully creepy and will make you look twice at every darkened spot you encounter. The notion of waking up to some dark form standing over you is frightening, and the idea that there may be creatures that we don't understand lurking around us is unnerving. The essence of the creepy ghost story is summed up in the notion of shadow people. But shadow people are also fascinating as a cultural construct. I do not doubt that people see things that they may not understand and may not be able to explain themselves. But the often willful rejection or warping of actual mundane explanations for these events is interesting in of itself and likely ties into the emotional reaction that people have when they have such an experience. More fascinating still is the way that notions from fiction and pop culture are tied into an odd tapestry that looks initially as if those making use of it have seriously considered this matter and studied the phenomenon. It likely leaves those who have spent time with it feeling as if they have explanations, but it is ultimately a fig leaf made up of concepts that lack actual substance. Is there more to shadow people sightings than the various perception and sleep-related matters I have discussed? In some cases, maybe. But if one seeks explanations, you won't find it in superficial discussions of alternate dimensions, time slips, and dubious claims about quantum physics, however clever such explanations may be. Because there are many reasons why people see shadow people, they aren't going to leave our folklore. But it will be interesting to see how many of the explanations currently in vogue survive, and whether the shadow person reverts to being just another expression of the ghost.
If you have a weird tale, have had a strange experience of your own, or know of a bit of local lore that should get a wider audience, please feel free to contact me at ghostthropology@gmail.com. That's ghostthropology@gmail. You can find more at kmmamedia.com. Click on the Ghostthropology link, and you can find episodes, transcripts, sources, and a link to support us through Patreon.
Spooky!